Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. This is your host, John Simperman, with my co-host,
Tim O'Shea.
Tim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing excellent, John.
Great.
Excellent. It's my favorite time of year. We've got, the NFL never goes away. We got the NFL draft coming up, hockey playoffs, basketball playoffs, right. Really, too. And it's baseball season.
And baseball season's in full bloom. Yeah, everything's going on. And I do want to talk a little bit about the NFL draft. But before that, I wanted to let our viewers and our listeners know we've got a great guest today on Skin in the Game, Eddie Lewis, who is a former Team USA soccer player. He is now the founder and the president of Toka Soccer, which is this super innovative integration of technology and training. Really excited with the conversation we're going to have with Eddie, because I think this is kind of really next generation stuff.
Oh, for sure. I mean, John, I'm excited for people to hear about the Toka training.
Yeah.
And what that looks like. And I mean, you talk about something that is targeted, customized, data-driven. It's great, but Eddie has built a business that not only trains high-end athletes, you know, soccer players, youth athletes, but also makes the game accessible and, frankly, still fun for adults, too.
Right.
Those are two things you do not usually see go together, and he's managed to marry them under one business.
Yeah, and what's really cool about this technology that his company is integrating, and Tim, this kind of gets me into a little thing I wanted to chat about anyways, which is there's this new term, eatertainment. Are you familiar with eatertainment?
I am not, but I like the sound of it. Tell me about eatertainment.
So it is the merger of kind of sports and kind of social gathering, right? Think of it as high tech arcades. If you know, we talked earlier on a show on Skin in the Game about these COSMs, which are these big immersive viewing experiences that are opening up next to arenas. As a matter of fact, they just broke ground in Cleveland next to the arena there. And then obviously Topgolf and golf simulators are integrating food, beverage, and sport. I've just ran across a place called Tipsy Golf up in the Pacific Northwest, which are state-of-the-art miniature golf and food and beer and craft beer.
Okay, I'm going to pause you real quick. Tipsy golf makes me think it's one thing. Is it that
tipsy
thing?
Tipsy golf. And by the way, I think these are going to take the rest of the country by storm. And then also, I don't know if you run across any of these pickleball establishments. There's a new one.
I'm still thinking about tipsy golf here, but you know, I see pickleball courts absolutely everywhere. But you're telling me that we're now taking pickleball and turning it into a more full entertainment type.
Okay. Exactly. And you're going to see these popping up everywhere. And I think part of it is, Tim, I think it's, and as Eddie Lewis will talk about, our guest, there's such great technology out there, not only for training athletes, but also just for the casual participant. And then I think as we finally are getting away from the haze of COVID, people are really looking for places to go out and socialize. So the timing for these entertainment establishments probably couldn't be better.
And I think, John, you mentioned the NFL draft. There's going to be a lot of socialization and probably some entertainment, whether in these establishments or not, going on in Pittsburgh. I'm thinking back a bunch of years when I first started covering the NFL. And honestly, the draft was really important. If you're a general manager and the coaching staff or the fans who love that team,
right.
It was not a form of entertainment. I mean, talk about something that's changed, you know, over the past decade or so.
Well, and this is really relevant to, you know, our listeners. I mean, a few years back, the draft was in Northeast Ohio. Next year, the draft is in Western New York, in Buffalo. And as you mentioned, right now, the draft is in Pittsburgh. Tim, they're looking at more than 500,000 visitors over a 3-day window. This is a game changer, you know, for when it comes to sports tourism for a market like Pittsburgh. And if you just look back at Green Bay, when they hosted the draft last year, they had a reported $104 million in economic impact from that event. So yeah, to your point, this isn't 30 guys sitting around with cigars around a draft table. You know, this is big business, big tourism business. And I think for a city like Pittsburgh, or for a city like Cleveland, or for a city like Buffalo, it's an opportunity for them to kind of rebrand their market, right? Because it's springtime, and really kind of help these markets kind of dust off some of the older blue collar imagery with a little bit more integration of some more contemporary branding and kind of brand positioning.
There are some great football markets that will never ever see a Super Bowl because they do not have the infrastructure to bring in, you know, that those hundreds of thousands of people to stay in town and move around, right?
Right, right.
This is their Super Bowl. This is what you're going to get.
Right.
If you have an NFL team, you're not going to get a Super Bowl. And that's something for people to think about too, right? Like, what's the economic benefit of having an NFL team beyond the, you know, those
eight to 10 days,
right? 8 to 10 Sundays, or right. maybe 12 if you, well, it's never quite 12, is it? But, you know, about a dozen dates a year, give or take. This is a big one that doesn't come around very often, but when you get it, it can be a huge, huge deal.
Yeah, yeah. No, so exciting for the fans in Pittsburgh, exciting, and actually exciting for a lot of fans in the Midwest, because it's a pretty easy market to get to. So good for them. Hey, Tim, I'd like to bring our guest on, and we'll talk a little bit more about technology. We'll talk a little bit about entertainment, as we alluded to. The president and founder of Toca Soccer, Eddie Lewis. Eddie, welcome to the program.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
Before we get to talk a little bit about, or a lot about your company, just for our listeners, if you can give us some your background and kind of then what led to the vision for creating Toca Soccer.
Sure. So I'm a former professional soccer player. I played 15 years professionally, both in the MLS and abroad in England, including the Premier League. I played for the U.S. team 83 times, including both the 2002 and the 2006 World Cups. So certainly an esteemed career from a soccer perspective. But, you know, long before that, I was very much an average kind of D1 player with, you know, certainly potential, but that was probably going to be the end of the road for me. And I was just constantly in search of some sort of exponential improvement. I played a ton of sports growing up, like most Americans at that time. You know, soccer was one portion of the year, but certainly not the only thing you did. I played football, tennis. I was an all-star baseball player. Even played on the golf team in high school. So, you know, what that meant was, you know, although I was a very good athlete, technically I was kind of behind the curve from a soccer perspective. You know, as the game got faster and better, I quickly realized that it was less about the athleticism and more about, you know, your technical ability on the ball and your sort of decision making under pressure. And that was hard to practice on your own, right? You could kind of kick a ball against the wall or juggle a ball, but that didn't do a whole lot for, you know, for those two things. So when I was in college, I stumbled upon this training methodology using a tennis ball machine and tennis balls, and that would, you know, just change the entire trajectory of my career. Mm. What it did was it gave me a competitive advantage and ability to get thousands and thousands of repetitions in ways that were very difficult kind of through normal practice. And, you know, along the way as a professional, also gave me firsthand insight into what really differentiated, you know, good players from great players. So literally from the day I retired, I, you know, quickly became an inventor and then, you know, sort of entrepreneur. And the idea was to take this, you know, small ball methodology with lots of reps, but then, you know, make it much more soccer specific. Kicking a tennis ball was obviously nothing like kicking a soccer ball. So, you know, a lot to do to make it more soccer specific. But again, growing up, realizing that, you know, there was a driving range for golf or batting cages for baseball or, you know, ball machines for tennis or lots of other things. It wasn't a bizarre concept. It just was very unique in soccer, I suppose.
I want to come back to the training and the growth that you saw. But before we get there, let's jump to the present and then we'll work our way backwards. Tell us about the state of Toca Soccer today.
Yeah. So today we're the largest operator of indoor soccer centers in North America, close to 40 centers now. And again, that involves Toka training, which is, what we were just discussing, but it also involves much more. Originally, I started by kind of installing our Toka studios inside of existing soccer centers, and then quickly realized there was an opportunity there as well, right? A lot of the soccer centers today were once hockey centers in the 70s, and they just basically put turf, over what used to be ice and called it a soccer center. But the soccer player has evolved quite a bit since then, certainly in North America, but the centers haven't. So in addition to the Toka training, we now, as I said, own and operate, 40 centers across the country, in which we'll run kids programs in the morning, Toka training in the afternoon, and adult soccer and pickup in the evenings.
So I'm now very intrigued with, you found, at least in your case, Eddie, you found kind of some of the secret sauce around training. It, just for our listeners too, is it an integration of technology? Is it, a smaller soccer ball? What's kind of that, I guess, that elevator speech, if you will, on the Toka soccer training method?
Essentially, a Toka studio exists of a small environment about 40 feet long by 25 feet wide, and it has a touch trainer, which is sort of the ball machine, and literally any type of ball you can imagine being delivered, from a soccer perspective, can be delivered. We can deliver the same ball over and over, or everyone totally random. In each corner, we have four targets. And they do a couple of things. They're data collection points. So, we obviously know whether you hit the target or not, but we measure the speed as it crosses the target so we can train players on their weight of pass. We measure the height at which it crosses to make sure they're good passes that are quality passes on the ground. We also timestamp when the ball leaves the touch trainer to when it crosses the target. And we call that speed of play, which, as you may or not be familiar, but in soccer, getting the ball and being able to control it and where you want it to go is certainly one thing, but being able to do that and do that quickly is kind of the whole thing. The targets also serve a second function, which is an awareness component. It's probably the area I think is most valuable, which is, typically a young soccer player will, receive a ball, they'll look up, they'll try and figure out where they're going to play next, and then they'll execute the pass. And, at the higher levels, players understand that they need to identify where they're going to play before they receive the ball so that they can quickly, receive it and pass. And every time you're in a Toka studio, 300 to 400 situational moments every single hour, a player is asked to identify 500 milliseconds or half a second before the ball comes out, which target is lit and where they're going to play so that they can receive and play more quickly. And, in soccer, that's a very, very high quality repetition, and our ability to do that in a really efficient manner has a tremendous impact on players.
Eddie, what did the early version of this look like? Start there and tell us about how the training, how the training studios and the training system have evolved.
We started with just the ball machine, right? Which was kind of the natural starting place. And, my big feature at the time, this is going back all the way to 2014 or 2015, was, I hated running back and forth and kind of adjusting the knobs on a ball machine, and smartphones were just kind of coming of age. So I thought, yeah, I want to be able to control this thing with my phone. And what that did was it did, well, a couple of things. Number one, it gave us a pretty slick and convenient remote control, but it also provided two-way communication, right? I could talk to the machine, but I was also getting information back. I could suddenly realize, okay, what I was working on, where the balls were being delivered, how many were being delivered. And in soccer, as I don't know, maybe also like a sport like hockey, it's a very fluid game, right? And it's not easy to kind of objectively measure, a lot of things like you could in potentially some other sports. Suddenly, me being able to consistently deliver the same ball over and over gave me something fixed that I could now measure against, right? And in soccer, as an example, if somebody said, hey, does a person have, good technical ability or a good first touch? Generally, the answer is just kind of, yes or no. And the reality is, there's 100 different ways to try and control a ball, depending on the direction you're going and which foot you're using and which part of the foot you're using. And, we wanted to be able to measure all those because every player, in fact, even the best players, are in some areas are certainly deficient, right? And if we could provide an environment where they could really lock in and, you know, improve in some of those areas, it's a much, you know, shorter curve than just magically by default, you know, running into that type of opportunity in a typical team training aspect.
You know, and I'm looking over to Tim. We've had a lot of athletes, including Olympians, here on Skin in the Game. And Tim, you talk a lot about this 10,000 hours of
Yeah.
practice and
Deliberate
just,
practice.
but it,
Yeah.
and it sounds like, and Eddie, correct me if I'm wrong, but this helps. I don't know if the word is accelerate it or condense it.
Focus it, maybe. Focus it on what you where you need it most.
Yeah, all of the above. And I think it's for that exact reason, which is, you know, this is typically hard repetitions to find. And it's wonderful that soccer has this great, rich history of being this romantic kind of simple sport, in that we could just go to the park with a couple of trash cans and a soccer ball, and we're now playing soccer. But I think the reality is, to become a very good soccer player, there's a laundry list of skills that need to be mastered. And my view was, as much as I was told as an American that, well, Eddie, because you guys play other sports and you focus on school and soccer isn't in your blood, you're not outside playing soccer all day, every day. So consequently, you're just never going to get as many touches as the best players and hence not be as good. So, you know, all I ever heard from that was, well, let's just find a way to get more touches then. And
All right, so I want to dive in here on the generalist versus specialist debate, Eddie, that I know you know is prevalent in youth sports, and I'm wondering where you land. Do you think it is preferable for young athletes, and I'm talking, you know, preteens, teenagers, to specialize in a sport of choice and devote everything they've got to that one sport? Or, you know, it sounds like you, by choice or maybe just by environment, you were a generalist. You played three or four sports in high school, and it sounds like you were really good at more than one of those too.
I'm a big believer in kind of the generalist mentality. You know, it's relative, right? And I think some sports, you know, lend themselves even more to it, right? That you can play, you know, professionally in the NFL and never even play football until high school, right?
Right.
Because it's just a pure athleticism sport. I don't think you could become a professional golfer or hockey player if you just started playing for the first time in high school, right?
Right,
There's
right.
a technical level that's so, you know, it's so hard. Soccer is obviously the same. Having said that, you know, the argument is less than 1% make it to the highest level just for the physiological benefits alone. You know, your body is in such better shape by playing multiple sports growing up that, you know, long into your 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s, you're able to do so much more physically because your body's in such a better position. I'll never forget when I first got over to England and the bodies of these soccer players, I mean, the highest level soccer players were shocking, the way they would pronate in on their ankles and, you know, everything that was just obviously a direct result of just playing soccer their entire lives is just a trade-off that, again, if we can find efficiencies or ways to be better without just committing young athletes to being, you know, locked in for 12 months a year, I certainly would be pushing in that direction.
No, that's great to hear, and you'll echo that with a lot of our guests. We were talking recently, we had an Olympic episode, and kind of the Norwegian philosophy around skiing and cross-country skiing and just the way they approach it. And by the way, they always win the most medals in the Winter Olympics, but it's exactly what you said. You know, be generalist, don't specialize until, of course, you know, you might hit that 15, 16, then your heart and your body is all in on it, right? And that's different, but early on, get involved with as many sports as possible. Yeah, we're here with Eddie Lewis, who is a former U.S. national team member and currently entrepreneur and founder of Toca Soccer. So on the soccer side and on the facility side, you said 40 centers across the U.S. I noticed quite a few: California, Texas, a stronghold in Northeast Ohio. What's kind of the makeup, I guess, on the business model? Are these youth subscriptions? Are they all walks of lives? Are they clubs? How, you know, I guess looking at the business side of it, how is this commercialized for Toca Sports? How do you get your participants, your members?
Well, yeah, from a business, model perspective, it's pretty simple. I mean, we know who our audience is, right? They're soccer players. So that's easy enough. We switched to a membership model a couple of years ago, and that's been a huge success, right? Customers come more often, they stay longer, they train longer, they play longer. That's been a really great, kind of step up for us from a business perspective. But I think the beauty of kind of what we offer is the opportunity for the lifetime value of a customer literally starts when they're 18 months old. And, we have adult leagues and, even seniors leagues in some capacity. Walking soccer, exists in some of our centers. So, the ability to retain a customer from, the first time they kick the ball to well into their 30s or 40s or 50s when, all they want to do is play soccer with friends so that they can get a good sweat on and, enjoy a beer after, is something that, we take a lot of pride in, and just making sure that customer experience and that relationship is, of the highest quality.
Eddie, for the athletes who come to you for that intensive training, that deliberate practice that we're talking about, describe that audience for us in a little more detail. I mean, what attributes are they bringing in? Are we talking about high school students who are aiming at a D1 scholarship? Is it something else?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think that the probably the line through all of them is there's some level of ambition, right? For us, the good news is the training works at any level. The reality is the most novice soccer players gain the most the quickest, right? As you can probably imagine, right? So as an example, we'll get maybe an 8 or 9 year old player who didn't start playing when they were 4 or 5, but now suddenly loves soccer and wants to be a good soccer player, but they're 4 or 5 years behind maybe some of their friends. And we can quickly catch them up and get them into a position technically that now they can compete. And maybe their goal is, hey, I want to be a varsity soccer player someday and, be a standout for my school, right? We have obviously a lot of kids who want to get college scholarships, and our customer is 50% male and 50% female, right? In fact, from a collegiate level, there's probably more girls wanting to get college scholarships than boys. Then all the way up to the professional level, we'll have professionals come in, and generally it's for two reasons. Number one, they've had an injury and they're now back training, but in a controlled environment. This like return to play portion is a really important part of their recovery, and our ability to give them a lot of really good quality repetitions in a very controlled environment, if you will, is critical both to that player and the team, and to be able to kind of close that gap between where they left and now they're coming back, as well as a player who wants to work in a very specific area, right? Like, for the youngest players, it's a very broad range of topics. For a professional player, they'll literally say, I want to do the same thing for an hour straight and let's just hammer it. And it's just, so it becomes very, very narrow and very simple. But obviously, at that level, a 2 or 3% difference can be, the result in a new contract or, hundreds of thousands of dollars, right?
With a young, promising athlete, and I'll just give a hypothetical example to shape the question. Let's say you've got a 14-year-old high school freshman who has great talent, tons of ambition, and, understandably would still need to improve quite a bit to go after that D1 scholarship. Talk us through the thought process when you're coaching a promising young athlete.
Yeah, for us, it's really simple, actually. The first time a player will come in, we'll run them through what we call a baseline session. And it's just a battery of exercises in order to identify what they're good at and what they're not good at, right? And that's one important element. And then we'll just layer that on, depending on where they are, kind of age-wise or level-wise, in addition to being good at a number of skills, they're also somewhat age or level appropriate, meaning, we're not going to work on, some advanced techniques if the player needs more help on just some of the underlying basics. In soccer, a lot of these skills kind of build upon each other, right? So being able to be good at most of the foundational elements, are critical to any of those higher level successes. In fact, we find that players who become master level or have mastery over some of these basic skill sets actually adapt the more advanced ones more quickly. They already know how to learn now, right? And they've, you know, for us, we kind of see this rolling improvement where it gets better, it kind of flatlines, and then they really ramp right after that.
And Eddie, have you seen or had any inquiries from other sports, i.e., be it hockey, lacrosse, on some of this technology to kind of compress that learning curve?
Yeah, thank you. In fact, quite a few. And at one point, you know, kind of started to go down the path of actually both in lacrosse. We had a hockey group that we were working on with and kind of co-developing. We even had the Water Polo Federation, of all things, trying to adapt the balls. I shouldn't say that. We had a volleyball group as well. And ultimately, what happened was Toca Social was just kind of being spun up around that time, and the decision was, as a business, you know, do we want to kind of broaden out, or do we want to, like, you know, just go hard on soccer and become this sort of revolutionary soccer brand? And, you know, at the time, that was the decision. I still have dreams of impacting other sports the same way we hope to impact soccer, you know, to as many people as possible. But, you know, for a lot of reasons, the technology is certainly relevant. I think in soccer, it's more relevant just because everything you're being asked to do in soccer is almost learned. There's nothing like another sport that could also help with. You could make an argument that, I don't know, by playing hockey or playing lacrosse, that could vice versa, you know, have an impact on each other's skills because of the hand-eye coordination or other things that are related to that, right? In soccer, it's tough. You know, there's not a lot of other sports that, you know, really translate to your foot-eye coordination in the same way. So, you know, for us, getting those touches on the ball and good quality touches are far more valuable in soccer than maybe they would be in some other sports.
Well, I'm not your business advisor, but I think you made the right decision to go to deeper into this the sport of soccer. As you know, where we in the United States and even Canada, we you know the fandom has not, nor the participation has not peaked yet. So I think you're on the right course.
I'm going to jump in though with the opposite question, certainly not to counter what John said. There's obviously incredible opportunity in soccer, and you found that. I don't even know if it's a niche. I mean, you found a very big opportunity, right?
Right.
And you know, carved out a very big piece of that space. I am wondering, Eddie, though, because clearly you've looked into this. Are there other sports where there is a need for more training or more specific training, more training with, I'll say it again, deliberate practice?
Yeah, I think, you know, without a doubt. In fact, some of the trends that I'm, you know, seeing the most are, broadly speaking, the investment in youth sports, you know, continues to grow. You know, broadly speaking, you know, technology's integration into, you know, performance, if you will, is, you know, is continuing to increase. But I think the thing that's most valuable is the fact that, you know, for the first time, that technology is now making its way more downstream, if you will, to the youth market than it ever has before, right? At the highest level, there's tons of video capture and analysis and information that's shared with professionals, but it takes a lot of manpower and it's expensive, right? And, you know, as the cost and the technology improves, to be able to now, you know, bring that to a, you know, obviously a much larger market, if you're talking about the number of youth athletes versus professional, I think is very exciting opportunity. And I think we'll only continue to get bigger and better, you know, not just in soccer, but across, you know, all youth sports.
Eddie, you brought up Toca Social. So I'm really intrigued by this because it's definitely an extension beyond the training centers. Can you talk a little bit about what's happening and where it's happening with Toca Social?
Toca Social is a, it's been a really fun kind of process and, you know, moment in the business, and that, you know, the soccer side of the business was up and running, and, you know, we were very focused on the performance side of training. But the reality was, there was, you know, during every session, which still exists today, if a young, you know, daughter of someone is training, you know, often the brother at the end of the session or the parent or someone will want to jump in and say, "Hey, can I hit a couple of volleys at the end, or get a couple of touches, or, you know, at the end of work, our trainers will, kind of hang out and go into a studio and have a volley competition. So the engagement and the excitement around what we had created eventually opened the door to, hey, well, maybe there's a bigger opportunity here. And Toca Social is really that. Often people call it the Topgolf of soccer, and it's essentially about half the size of one of our soccer studios. We take all the technology that we use in the soccer side, we added computer vision, we put this huge, 20-foot screen at the front, and it's taking all the elements of soccer, but at the same time, not deliberately, it doesn't pop it out and you try and score and beat a goalkeeper. It's, there's zombies coming at you and you have to kill them, with the soccer balls, or you're blowing up asteroids. We have a game with Angry Birds coming out soon, which will be some fun IP to play around with. So it's a really, really fun concept, and it's set in a beautiful, roughly 35,000 square foot facility. There's 20 or so boxes in there, big, beautiful bar where people can hang out and have drinks and, kind of socialize and reconnect with a game that up until now was sort of you were a fan. Maybe you played on a men's league team or an adult soccer team, in some capacity, but for the most part, you kind of just had to watch, right? So the ability to kind of reconnect with some of these moments that are, particularly hard to find in soccer and, not have to do any of the running or anything else, and share it with your friends has been a ton of fun. So we opened this week in Dallas for our first North American location, and I think it's just gonna
Wow.
absolutely go bonkers.
Well, I'm looking here to Tim because we talk a lot about, extending the arena experience and these developments, be it the hub in Boston or what's happening, around the potential new Browns stadium in Cleveland. Eddie, it seems like these concepts and what I would kind of call entertainment hospitality, right? People want to be entertained with their food, with their drink. And just like, the golf simulators that you see popping up, obviously you brought up the Topgolf. I'm seeing across the country these pickleball facilities that are opening up. It seems like this whole Toca Social would be a really nice fit around some of these stadium and arena developments as well.
Yeah, without a doubt. In fact, we have an opportunity in Los Angeles as part of the SoFi development, Freedom Park, Miami. You're exactly right. And I think much like Topgolf, initially, you kind of want it near a bunch of foot traffic. At some point, it becomes its own destination to a certain extent. But I think you nailed it right on the head in that, people really are enjoying, they want more than just the drink, right? They want some type of experiential element along with it. There's a lot of young people who, maybe aren't drinking in the same way their parents did and really want to spend more time, experiencing things, and maybe they'll have a drink or two, but won't just wanna sit at the bar and have five or six beers and watch a game. And I think this definitely lends itself to both, and we're having so much fun with it. We've been really successful in the UK. I think there have been some question marks around, well, soccer is just such a part of everyone's life in the UK. America, it could be different, and I just think it can't be any further from the truth, right? There's so many soccer players, both on the men and the women's side. Hopefully we'll be in every MLS, market within a couple of years here. I forgot to mention that, but we're partners with the MLS as of a couple of years ago, and really, wanting to lean into that relationship is, I think we both kind of share the same mission in that, we want to grow the sport as much as possible here in North America.
We're here with Eddie Lewis, the founder of Toca Soccer. Eddie, are you also seeing some of this technology in your travels being integrated into arenas and stadiums across the globe?
It's funny you mention it. It's a great segue. We are developing something today called a shot box, which is, well, it's had a few iterations of names. I'm not sure it'll land there, but yeah, essentially one of the boxes that we use in a Toca Social, where we're looking to, install in venues, in stadiums, in arenas, in airports, in malls. There's hundreds and hundreds of applications, but for the reason, you just mentioned, which is, we don't necessarily need a whole facility, but the opportunity to kind of extend that experience to, more and more locations is something we're very, very interested in.
Eddie, is it fair to say that the roots of Toca are, you know, are rooted in intensive training to help good players become great and great players become even greater? And I'll start there. I'm going somewhere with this, but am I starting in the right place here?
Definitely,
So
definitely.
talk me, so I'm really intrigued. Talk us through how you think about the branding and how you, essentially what I'm asking here is how, kind of how do you keep the business on track, or what's the through line as you think about growth and opportunities and what to do and what not to do?
Thank you. It's a really important part of how we look at things, strategically. And I think while, yes, the business did start very much with through this kind of performance lens, the opportunity to really just focus on how people experience soccer became more and more evident, right? And again, while I was, very locked in on, trying to create the best soccer players, it quickly opened the door to, gosh, these soccer centers don't reflect, the current soccer player at all. We need to do something about that. And then as Toca Social emerged, it quickly became, this is crazy. Fans, they don't have any opportunity to kind of re-engage with the sport in the way they truly love. And, more globally as a brand, today, my biggest thing is there's not a brand out there that just represents soccer and like the love of soccer, right? You have, it's either tied to some sort of federation, it's tied to a club, it's a huge global, retailer that does a bunch of different things, but like there's not a brand that you can just wear across your chest that says, I love soccer and I love everything that it represents. And, I want to be that brand, and I think we can.
And Tim, going back to my compliment of Eddie earlier, it's staying in that soccer lane, right? And it's keeping that authenticity, you know, and building that lifetime value with the fan, you know, versus an Adidas or a Nike, where, you know, their logo's synonymous with all sports, you know. Toca Soccer owns that, hopefully that lifetime experience and that passion for that fan.
Eddie, I want to ask you about the passion, and again, going back to the roots of Toca. So when you were a D1 player and you know, clearly it sounds like you knew you had potential, but you needed something more. And so you went out and you found the type of training, or developed the type of training, that helped you know, become a national team member and lead to the great career you had. Tell us about how that type of training, once you found it, and that type of improvement impacted your relationship with the sport.
For me, and the way I had stumbled upon it was our locker room at UCLA was inside a Poly Pavilion. So often before we'd go out to practice, we'd sit and watch them train. And they brought out this smaller than regulation size hoop. And they were all working on their 3-point shots with the idea of, if you can consistently score on this, the big hoop would look, obviously much easier. And I thought, okay, I get that. So I went home and kind of went the other way and essentially just shrunk the size of the ball. I'd throw the ball against the parking garage next to my apartment, and I'd throw it 30 or 40 times, and then I'd lose the spot or whatever else, and that would be that. But after a couple of weeks, I started to notice an improvement, and it was two reasons. Number one, the number of reps I was getting, but number two, the reps in areas that I needed work on, right? So I was left-footed. If I was working on my right foot in soccer or in a team training, I couldn't spend that whole session working on my weakness because I would be giving the ball away every single time. And what you end up doing is compounding the problem because you focus on your strengths and try and like avoid your weaknesses. If I had a chance to bring it, with my right, I would generally use the outside of my left foot. And that would translate into losing, two or three steps in the process. I would keep the ball and I would have a good touch, but it could impact what I'd maybe want to do or have the opportunity to do as the game improved. So what I was seeing was, as I, then bought a tennis ball machine and really, ramped the thing up, was all these opportunities that used to be closed were suddenly now opening up. right? I could play with my head up more because I didn't have to worry about, like, am I going to have a good first touch or be able to control the ball well, right? If the defender was like taking away my left foot, I just easily went to the right and didn't have to think twice about it, right? My ability to play a ball first time versus like wanting to bring it down and make sure I had it, you know, under control. All these, you know, doors and windows started opening that were due to the fact that I was a much better player technically now, right? Which, you know, in the past, that's where just so many great players get left behind because, you know, the ball, you know, always moves quicker than a player. So, you know, for me, that was, you know, this aha moment of like, this is the differentiator, right? Of course, you need to want to work hard and be a competitor and, you know, be a good athlete and the normal things. But this was a definitive, you know, barrier that if you don't master this, you're never going to make it.
Right. Hey, Eddie, as we wrap up this conversation, just wanted to kind of take a 30,000-foot view because you're in the sport. Kind of the state of U.S. soccer. You know, how are we doing as far as growth and participation? Yeah, just what are you seeing? What are you hearing out there?
Yeah, well, and I know you have a lot of Canadian listeners, so I'll definitely say
Yeah.
they seem to be doing a little bit better than us in terms of trajectory at the minute. But you know, I think the good news is the players today are far more talented than we ever were, for sure. But I think the reality of soccer globally is the rest of the world is all getting better, you know, in some cases faster than we are. You know, as much improvement as we're making in the US, you know, you still can kind of be net negative if the rest of the world is getting better faster, if you will, right? And I don't think the world's ever been, you know, in a more competitive landscape than it is today. I mean, that's obviously present in the fact that there's 48 teams in the World Cup. And, you know, at the end of the day, you only have to put, you know, 11 of them out there, or you're going to use 15 or 16 guys. England or Brazil or Germany could put, you know, 115 out there, but you only need 15, right? So, you know, whether you're Turkey or Egypt or the US or Canada or, you know, any of these countries that are, you know, emerging and certainly getting better, I think it's a much, much more competitive landscape. And I think that the fact that the tournament's here will be huge for the US, it'll be huge for Canada. I think that's an automatic 20% boost, which is great. But I'd say on the whole, on both the men's and the women's side, and the women have dominated forever, mostly because not a lot of other countries were playing, you know, and I think as more and more countries are getting really good, you know, as evidenced by, you know, Spain and France, you know, on the women's side, it's only going to get harder and harder for, you know, both the men and the women to compete globally.
Why is the rest of the world getting better than we are? And for that matter, what should the US be doing about that?
Yeah, that's a longer conversation.
I figure, yeah, right at
My
the end, we're going to ask you that one.
yeah, my view is that it's not, you know, it's not the players, right? We have tremendous players, tremendous athletes. I think it's a lot of times a coaching problem and a system problem, you know, if you will, right? Club sports has kind of evolved into this winning hierarchy structure versus development, you know, and player development. You know, I think there's a better bridge being built between the professional levels and development. But, you know, Atoka, that's another good opportunity for us, right? It's easy to complain, but it's harder to say, okay, well, what are you doing about it, right? And for us, as an example, with our relationship with the MLS, most academies don't start until the age of 12. So, you know, we're working with the MLS to make sure every player that we certainly get our hands on, you know, we want to be able to hand off the best 12-year-olds possible to these academies by, you know, giving them, you know, all the Toka training and, you know, technical, you know, sort of repetitions that we can. And we see that as a way for us to contribute to the problem that I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, that's great. And I think, as you said, there's a huge opportunity coming here with the World Cup, and more eyes will be on the game, and hopefully that will bring more youth into the sport to continue the momentum. Well, Eddie, I want to thank you for joining us on Skin of the Game. And Tim, I think one of our road trips is going to be to Toka Social in Dallas.
I was gonna say LA. I'll do either. I'll do both. I'll do both.
We would love to host you. I think it's absolutely a worthwhile trip, or if you're in the neighborhood, but please stop by and check it out. We have, you know, 4 soccer centers and Atoka Social now in Dallas. So very much awesome. the flywheel we've been looking to create for quite a while now.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, keep up the great work. And we're really grateful to all the work you're doing to continue to grow the game here in North America. And, you know, let's stay in touch. Thank you, Eddie.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Eddie.
Tim, it was great to get to converse with Eddie and get a really great download on what Atoka Soccer is doing and where they're heading.
And you know, you talk about an incredible evolution of a company that, to your point, has really stayed on track in one space. I've got to think it's tempting to go to water polo or
hockey would be a natural. And I've being involved in the sport of hockey, I've seen some of the training tools. I think hockey would be a natural. But I do think that, stay in the lane and be the premier deliverer of technology and training and now
entertainment. Yeah, I mean, that's quite the evolution. Soccer. It's, you know, there's big decisions about what to do and what not to do.
What I think is also interesting, and we've had a number of guests on, is kind of that transition from athlete to entrepreneur, right? And Eddie really developed this training system because he saw a deficit in his training, right? And how could he catch up with the rest of the world? But then, to his credit, he turns this into a business. You know, what a great story about transitioning from on the pitch or on the field to, you know, to the boardroom.
As an athlete, he would know, as a soccer player, he would know what the unmet needs are out there in terms of training. But then actually being able to build a business around it. You worked for 4 major league sports teams, and then you left and you started your own sports marketing firm, which I know was quite successful. I mean, what was that like for you to go from kind of playing the game where others were funding it to then being the person in charge and the builder?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's funny you bring that up, and maybe Eddie could relate to this too, is when I was running the marketing for a sports team, so much of my job was dependent on someone else,
right?
Be it the guys on the basketball court or the guys on, you know, the ice, right? So I was mostly reacting, right? How do you take advantage of the wins? How do you minimize the effect of the losses? And it's, you know, at the end of the day, I couldn't put the puck in the net or hit the free throw. So it was kind of nice, honestly, to go to the agency side where I could work with clients who were even beyond sports teams and really, you know, kind of rely and affect change on my own or our team's own versus being so dependent on something that was out of your control. And I think in the case of Eddie, he, you know, he invented this training method to control his own destiny. And now, through Atoka Soccer, he has the ability to kind of share that technology and share that experience for more people in the game. So it's really, it's more about controlling your own destiny, right?
And it does take a certain type of personality to want to be the one doing that, right? And I mean, you live that, Eddie lives that. So I don't even know if you guys know that you've got that.
I do.
But you certainly, I'll say it from the outside of it, you certainly do.
You mean don't like to be dependent on others? Is that what
don't like to work for others, maybe. I'll let you decide that.
Hey, the other thing, I didn't even know before we got on the call with, or the interview with Eddie, about this whole Atoka Social concept. And it's brilliant, actually. And, you know, I've seen it. I think it's called Pickles and Waffles. It's this pickleball, these entertainment complexes. Obviously, we've seen it with Top Golf, but we've also even seen it in smaller golf simulators. It just makes sense that people could come together, kick a ball around, kill a zombie, have a beer. it's really cool. And I could really see these popping up, you know, around these entertainment districts, right? Whether it be the Battery in Atlanta, whether it be, you know, around Gillette Stadium, a place like Titletown. I just think having that ancillary entertainment It's really cool. And I think while the first one's in Dallas, the second one is looks like it's hopefully going to be opening up in Los Angeles around SoFi Stadium. I think Toca Social's onto something.
Yeah, and I love the idea that they have built the word social built right into the name, because, you know, there's always part of me when I think about Topgolf, Toca Social, any, you know, pickles and waffles or waffles and pickles. No, but anything where you're taking a sport that people could go play and enjoy the competition, enjoy the, you know, them getting out there and breaking a sweat, that type of thing. There's part of me always that says, why do you have to add something to it? But then I immediately jump to at least one of the answers, which is, one, why not? Why not make it even more fun?
Right?
But also, why not open it up to people who may not have grown up as soccer players? I'm one. I wasn't a soccer player. Ask me to go play soccer, and I wouldn't hate the idea, but I wouldn't gravitate to it because I didn't do it as a kid. Ask me to go play soccer and have a drink and maybe mix it up with some video game type of experience.
It's hilarious. It's great.
That may get me out there playing soccer, right?
Well, and it's we've had a number of golf episodes on Skin in the Game. You know, they talked about the growth in popularity of golf. You remember what? Golf was dead 10 years ago, right? COVID brought people back outside to the golf course, but all these golf professionals said, you know something? Topgolf benefited golf. Because just to your point, it got people who may not have ever swung a golf club to give it a shot in an entertaining environment. And that might get them out on a real golf course,
right?
With a lesson. Worst case, when they watch the PGA on television, they're going to appreciate it and they'll probably tune in longer. So there's bigger halo. There's a bigger benefit with these Toca Social venues than just simply, you know, getting more people to come in and have a drink. There's actually a bigger opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. And I even think about things like banana ball, right?
Yes.
A really fun, different version of baseball. Before we go, though, John, you know, Eddie rang an alarm bell there at the end of our conversation.
Yeah.
I perked up and I could feel you, you know, you locking in on this. The rest of the world is getting better at soccer than we are. They're improving more quickly than we are. And, you know, when I asked him why, his view is the club soccer system isn't focusing enough on developing players. They're focusing too much on winning. That's a big statement.
It's a big statement. And it goes back to that conversation. If you recall a few episodes back on Skin in the Game, I brought up the whole Norway way of training athletes. There's no wins. There's no losses. There's no first, second, or third place until you get to the age of 15. You play for the love of the game, not necessarily the win or the loss.
Right. And so, you play to play, too.
You play to play.
You know, like if you're a kid on a club soccer team, you're there hopefully because you love it.
Yeah.
Somebody, probably your parents, are paying a lot of money for you to be there. There should be an expectation of getting out on that field.
Right.
You know, quite a bit.
You brought up the coaches. You know, the coaches shouldn't be judged on wins and losses.
Right.
You know, the coaches should be judged on kids coming back the next year, kids getting better.
Coaching is teaching. Coaching is not just competition. It's not even primarily competition.
Right.
But that's a soapbox I would love to climb back.
We'll say that for another episode.
You give me that soapbox, and I think you'll be up there with me on that.
Yeah. So, hey, thank you, Eddie Lewis from Toca Soccer, for joining us today on Skin in the Game. And thank you for listening.
Skin in the Game is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. You can catch up with all our episodes on btpm.org/skininthegame or on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.